Hi friends, this is Jonathan Daugherty, founder of Be Broken and host of the PSR podcast. As we approach the end of the year, I want to take a moment to say thank you for being part of this growing community. You know, every week we get to bring hope, healing, and freedom to men, women, and families who are longing for sexual integrity and wholeness. And that's only possible because of generous supporters like you. Right now, we've been given an incredible opportunity, a matching gift challenge of $71,500. Now, what that means is that every dollar that you give between now and December 31st will be doubled to help even more people discover God's grace and hope. So I'm just asking you to prayerfully consider giving a special year-end donation. You know, whether it's $5 or $500 or more, your gift will go twice as far in helping lives be transformed. Just visit bebroken.org/give to make your donation and be part of this mission of restoring wholeness one story at a time. That's bebroken.org/give or call 210-822-8201. From all of us at Be Broken, thank you, and may God bless you richly today.
We're not just avoiding what's bad. We're receiving what's good. We're receiving the things that we needed but didn't get when we were younger. We're actually finding our deeper desires fulfilled by God in community with others and even within ourselves. Like, it's just a bigger, better life. It's not restrictive. It's redemptive.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. In today's episode, I sit down with Drew Boa to discuss his new book entitled Outgrow Porn, Find Lasting Freedom Without Fighting an Exhausting Battle. Drew shares his personal journey and explains why traditional purity culture and military-style approaches often fall short. We then explore his compassionate, holistic method that focuses on healing childhood wounds, understanding emotional triggers, and embracing inner child work. Drew encourages viewing relapses as feedback, not failure, and highlights the importance of grace and self-compassion in recovery. So if you're a man that's seeking hope and lasting change, this conversation offers fresh insight and encouragement. To get the book, visit outgrowporn.com. To learn more about Drew and his ministry, visit husbandmaterial.com. For additional resources, you can visit our website at bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And as always, friends, I am going to invite you to rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now, let's dive into today's inspiring and practical conversation with Drew. All right, friends, we have with us today Drew Boa. Welcome to the program, Drew.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah, so I'm excited to have you on. I know I've been on your podcast. I think you've had on, mm-hmm. We've had you on ours before. And so we've got these kind of parallel ministries that are doing work with men and helping them to really understand what it is to walk in integrity and live new lives that are free from porn and all kinds of other unwanted sexual behaviors. But today, I wanted to talk specifically about a new book that you have written that's called Outgrow Porn. And the subtitle is Find Lasting Freedom Without Fighting an Exhausting Battle. And if the title didn't get you, the subtitle, wait a second, without fighting an exhausting battle, that should make every man curious. Because I think most guys, when they are thinking about trying to overcome their besetting sin, their unwanted porn use, they're like, their shoulders drop. And they're like, the only hope I have is to be in this torture chamber for the rest of my life, and, you know, denying myself. So before we start diving into a few of the nuggets throughout this book, why don't you just tell us a little bit of your own story and ministry and kind of how you got to the place of saying it's time to write this book?
Yeah. Well, I was a boy who loved Jesus and hated porn, but couldn't stop using it. And I found that the more I resisted my sexual thoughts and feelings, the stronger they got. And so it was so frustrating and exhausting. Now I did get more and more freedom as I learned how to open up to other guys, about the specifics of my struggles and the sexual fetish that was always the focus of my porn searches. I mean, through prayer, through scripture, I felt like the Lord was fighting for me, and that was all great. And even after 1 year of freedom, I still went back to the same behaviors as before. And I realized, you know, they still have power over me. As long as I'm fighting this battle, I can always lose. And even if I'm doing great, like, those sexual fantasies still had a magical aspect that I was so fascinated by. And it wasn't until I got engaged to be married and decided that I really needed to be husband material that I took a deeper journey that ultimately led me to a different approach, the outgrow porn approach.
Yeah. Now, and so when did you actually start writing this book? Because you've been teaching this material for a long time.
Yeah, the book is based on the Husband Material Academy online course, which has been around since 2020. And we've taken hundreds of guys through this material and found out what resonates, what could be improved. And the book is based on all of that. So it's about 5 years.
Yeah, that's great. So you kind of start out the book and you talk about purity culture. And maybe for those who are unfamiliar with that term, could you describe what that is? And then also you talk about kind of the five problems with purity culture. Can you go into that?
Yeah. So purity culture was an evangelical movement that really peaked in the 90s and early 2000s, reacting to the aftermath of the sexual revolution. So in the 1960s, the United States and really the whole world went through massive change in people's attitude towards sexuality. It became much more permissive, much more wild and experimental. And then through the 70s and eventually the 80s, we got to the AIDS crisis, and people were dying, and the church wanted to respond. And understandably emphasized the negative consequences of premarital sex. And there's nothing wrong with teaching that God's design for sex is in marriage. Here's the problem with purity culture. It was the way it was taught. It was all motivated by fear and shame, the fear of getting a sexually transmitted infection, the shame of feeling like my sexual thoughts and feelings are bad, or that I'm impure if I've had sexual activity as a kid.
Like, or if you've just been aroused, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So there was this feeling that sex is bad unless you're married and then it's good. Like, it was confusing. It was difficult. People had purity rings, purity pledges. They had balls and dances where people would, you know, promise to stay pure. And unfortunately, all that fear and shame just fueled the fire of addiction for many of us. And so purity culture is not the only version of negative views of sex. It was the one that I grew up with and many of my peers grew up with.
Now, you talk about the five problems of purity culture. Can you talk about what those are?
Yes. First, toxic shame. So the belief that sex is nasty, gross, disgusting, it's not something we talk about. So many of us grew up in homes where we didn't get a sex talk, or if we did, it was maybe one. And for the rest of it, sex became a forbidden, magicalized, secret part of life. This toxic shame naturally results in the second problem, that I see in purity culture, which is repressed sexuality, feeling the need to shut down sexual thoughts and feelings. And as we talked about, that just makes them stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why so many men feel like they're stuck in this cycle of purging from porn and then binging on it, repressing our sexuality and then releasing it. It's absolutely discouraging and devastating to be trying for years to get free, mm-hmm. but being caught in that cycle. And a lot of the way that purity culture enforced that sexual repression was through what I call the military mindset. And you see this in a number of porn recovery programs. And frankly, the military mindset actually helped me at the beginning in my early stages of recovery to like take this seriously. Like, okay, I'm going to rise up. I'm going to be a man. I'm going to deal with these issues. And yet it felt like it still put me in a fight against myself. Like my sexuality needed to be conquered or erased, this is the problem and I need to fix it. So the military mindset often goes along with problem number four, which is cultures of control. And your typical porn recovery group is often what I call a culture of control. It's rigid. It's very rules-based. Rules matter more than relationships, and disengaged. There's not a lot of heart connection. It's more like, hey, how are you doing with your behavior this week? Not as much like being fully known and loved, which is what we need. So those cultures of control are often reenacting the family environment that primed us for porn in the first place, like growing up in a family where rules were more important than relationships and didn't really feel seen or connected. So all of that is what I first experienced when I first started to try to deal with my story.
A couple of those, when you talk about the military mindset, I'm like, that is extremely effective for what it's meant for. Military mindset means you have that mindset in a war, but not all of what you're dealing with in your sexuality is a war, right?
Yeah.
There is a component, right? Where we're battling temptation. We're battling certain things. We're trying to resist. But that's maybe 15% of what our entire sexuality is meant to be. So sometimes I would think what purity culture did is it started to take these segments of what it means to be a man or a woman of integrity and said, now let's make that cover what it means to be sexual. And it's like, wait a second, you're missing 90% of what it actually means to be male and female created in God's image. It's not just about fighting a war, and it's not just about controlling behavior. It's so much more than that, right?
I really like the way you said that because it validates the goodness of that mindset as a limited partial approach. So, like, is there spiritual warfare involved? Yes. And there are also many other issues that are biological, psychological, relational, spiritual, and we're all of it. Sexuality is connected to all of it.
Yeah. So we're probably already touching on this a little bit, but my next question is, what makes the outgrow porn approach maybe unique and different? I feel like we're already hinting towards some of that, but what makes the outgrow porn approach unique?
Well, we're starting with a very basic and profound assumption, which is that for the most part, men don't get hooked on porn, boys do. Or women don't get hooked on porn, girls do. And once you really realize that, you need to start taking a different approach because it's not the mature adult part of me that has the urge to watch porn. It's the little boy within me. And so as long as I was taking that military mindset, it's like I was fighting the boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the outgrow porn approach says, let's start with looking at our childhood experiences and figuring out where our sexual development got stuck.
Well, so let's talk about that just a little bit more because I can imagine people are asking questions, but Drew, why do you start from that assumption? What's kind of your basis for that? Like, is it all anecdotal, or is there some kind of, like, you know, research? Or not that we rely totally on research, right? I mean, all of our lives cannot be compacted down into a study. But like, what makes you believe that that assumption is a good and correct assumption to make?
I mean, Common Sense Media did a study in 2023 that found the average age of exposure to porn is 12 years old, and most are younger than that. When I get in a room of people who, like, are wanting freedom from porn, I'll say, when did you first get introduced to pornography? And maybe 90%+ were 13 or younger.
Yeah, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I have never had a man say, I was 31 when I first saw him. Yeah. Like, never, never. The oldest I think I've ever had was a guy who was like 18 or 19. But I've never even had guys in their 20s say that was like the first time they'd ever been exposed to pornography.
Yeah. And yet, when I ask men, how much of your struggle with porn do you believe is your fault? Almost all of them will say, it's completely 100% my fault. Not realizing that porn exploited them as children. Like, porn is the primary sexual educator for so many people. And it's a sexual abuser. So I really think the journey to lasting freedom looks a lot like healing from childhood sexual abuse.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because that gets into something that is generally termed like kind of inner child work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some people, especially some Christians, they sort of get leery when you start talking inner child. That sounds like psychobabble. It sounds a little new age. It sounds like, so how do you view kind of that inner child work through a lens that can couple kind of the scientific with the biblical?
Yeah. We can look at it through the lens of brain science, or we can look at it through the lens of the Bible. One of my favorite chapters of the Bible is Psalm 131, where the psalmist says, I have stilled and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. What a beautiful picture of inner child work. That there are parts of my soul that are like a little child. They're young. And they don't need to be yelled at. They don't need to be punished. They need to be soothed, you know, stilled and quieted and comforted. And so inner child work is a way of practicing Psalm 131. In terms of brain science, the inner child is really an oversimplified way of talking about memory. So there are two types of memory: explicit memory, which is like remembering a fact, and implicit memory, also known as body memory, which is re-experiencing events. And when we talk about my inner child, we're talking about those times when I'm re-experiencing events. Like when I'm talking to my wife and I feel like I'm talking to my mom, or I'm in a group of men at church and I feel like I'm back in middle school in the locker room. It's like, this happens automatically. It happens effortlessly. Our brains interpret the present through the lens of the past. And so the inner child is just a way of making it easier to process our body memories that are showing up sometimes decades later.
How does a lot of this inner child work kind of dovetail with what the recovery community will often talk about in terms of exploring, knowing your triggers and that kind of stuff? Because those overlap in many ways. And why is it important that you bring those two works together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is something I've not heard anyone else talk about in the same way. We all have triggers. We all have things that make us not just frustrated, but infuriated, or not just sad, but devastated. You know, like someone's facial expression, a certain word, a certain kind of touch can be very, very activating. Our triggers reveal our trauma. They reveal our wounds. But this is the part that people don't really talk about. There are actually two types of triggers: pain triggers and pleasure triggers. Mm-hmm. So pain trigger is a difficult experience that feels just intolerable. Like it's not just hard. It's like, I cannot.
Like I won't survive this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to die if I keep feeling this shame or this loneliness. Then we also have pleasure triggers. A pleasure trigger is when you see someone or perhaps an image that feels not just attractive, but irresistible. Like it has a magnetic pull. And that's what I call pleasure triggers. And both our pain triggers and our pleasure triggers are often connected to our childhood experiences. And it's fascinating to figure out those connections. So one example would be, for me, the type of porn that I referenced, which has always had power over me, features girls and women with braces on their teeth. And that trigger is a pleasure trigger for me. And it goes back to middle school. It goes back to what happened to me when I was 13 years old, 14 years old. And that trigger really burned into my brain at that time. I sexually imprinted onto images of girls and women with braces. And so it's really freeing to realize that the things that often are magically, magnetically powerful for us have a story behind them. And when we see that story, they can become more manageable and less extremely intense.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what does it actually look like for a man to kind of start working on inner child and maybe even seeking to discover what his specific pain and pleasure mm-hmm. triggers are. Yeah. And how that fits into this model of actually outgrowing porn rather than just like behavior management or, you know, military approach. How does this kind of work lead to outgrowing porn?
Mm-hmm. So when you get triggered or you feel something emotional and sexual that prompts you to seek out porn or sexually fantasize, for example, here are the questions you can ask yourself. When have I felt this way before? And when have I felt the opposite? So if I'm feeling lonely, like nobody really wants me, okay, when have I felt that way before? Stories will start coming to the surface. And if there's a specific type of porn that makes me feel excited or accepted, okay, when have I felt the opposite? When have I felt bored and rejected? This is a trailhead that we can follow. And the book gives a lot of guidance on that. It's also helpful to go through this with a professional, mm-hmm. counselor, therapist, even a group leader can help to start to pinpoint some of the places where our triggers are having power over us. And that's the starting point for inner child work.
Yeah. You talk in the book about three great sexualizers. Mm-hmm. Can you share what those are? And again, why it's important for somebody to understand that in terms of them learning how to outgrow porn?
Absolutely. Underneath the surface of our sexual fantasies, when we start asking these questions like, when have I felt this way before? When have I felt the opposite? We discover three major themes. I call them the sexualizers because if these three things don't get processed, they're going to come out some way or another. And for many of us, it comes out sexually. Fear, shame, and loss. As a boy, when did you feel unsafe or afraid? As a boy, when did you feel ashamed? What did you believe about yourself? And then finally, what were you cut off from? What did you lack that you deeply desired? As we start to explore those things, we see how porn and other types of sexual stimulation provided a symbolic solution.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because there may be people in the audience that have been in recovery for a while, or they've been, you know, and I know this was part of my own experience, is that I have yet to meet a man who has developed a full-blown sexual addiction that does not have a massive, well, I shouldn't say massive, but at least some level of struggle with anger.
Mm.
And so they might be thinking, wait, well, Drew, why didn't you put anger in there as a sexualizer? And I believe it's because anger sits on top of all three of those.
Yeah.
Because if you think about fear, shame, and loss, it's easy and acceptable for men to just get angry.
Right.
But underneath that is probably a fear, a shame, or a loss. And so yes. I think you're really getting to the bedrock. And sometimes mm-hmm. we don't realize that anger is just a symptom. It's not yes. necessarily what's really at the floor level of that. And let me ask you this. When guys start to really understand what their core fear is, what the shame lies have been, what their losses and even traumas have been, what does that do for starting to get them to reframe their recovery journey from this idea of I'm just supposed to stop a particular behavior to actually mm-hmm. realizing they're working towards something rather than away from something?
Yeah. Yeah. We're not just avoiding what's bad. We're receiving what's good. We're receiving the things that we needed but didn't get when we were younger. We're actually finding our deeper desires fulfilled by God in community with others and even within ourselves. Like, it's just a bigger, better life. It's not restrictive. It's redemptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had kind of the mentality that I think a lot of Christians had, especially those who might've been influenced by purity culture or whatever, is when you started thinking about the boundaries, the quote unquote laws of God that were supposed to be around your life, I had the idea of like, I had my posture incorrect towards those boundaries. Meaning it's as if I was standing at the fence of the boundary, but I was looking out across the outside of the boundary at what I couldn't or shouldn't have, when I didn't realize that God actually constructed those boundaries so that I would actually have my back to the boundary and be able to see the infinite pleasures and joys and freedoms that are inside of the boundary. And I feel like what you're doing in this mentality of outgrowing something that's negative is you're saying, guys, we were meant to have our backs toward the boundary, and we were meant to be continuing to pursue what's inside that boundary. And it's, you know, as the Bible puts it, it's blessings evermore. You know, it's like, there's a flourishing that can happen in that. Now, we do understand that no one ever travels this journey absolutely perfectly. But one of the things that you describe in the book is you talk about porn relapses to be seen as feedback, not failure. Why do you say that, and try to describe that?
Oh man. Well, it's based on the very foundational idea that shame is not very helpful in finding freedom. And yet shame is what drives us to porn. Shame is what we feel after a porn relapse. And so viewing it as a failure, might be true. And also, it's not very helpful. So I recommend viewing it as feedback. Like, what can I learn from this? Again, outgrow porn is this growth mindset that all this research has been done on, that a growth mindset rather than a fixed mindset is essential. Because when you have a fixed mindset, you think, I'm always going to struggle with this. I'm fundamentally flawed, and there's no hope for me. Whereas when you take a growth mindset, you're thinking, okay, I made a mistake. This is not who I am. And frankly, my relapses have been my best teachers. I've learned more from a relapse than any podcast, any book, any counseling session, because they reveal what's really going on in my heart.
And you know what? Let me push on that just a little bit more, because, you know, part of your story, and this is the beauty of when we get on this redemptive journey, is that you've been free from internet porn for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so somebody might hear what you just said about learning from failures and go, wait a second, you haven't looked at porn in 10 years. Have you stopped learning? Can you talk about how there's other types of failures and foibles that happen along the way that are not just actually acting out in your sexual behavior, right?
Yeah.
And you can still learn from things. Like, I'll give you an example from my own life. Sometimes I learn more now from what we might call sins of omission than rather sins of commission. Like, God is clearly telling me, do this. And I'm like, I don't want to. And it's like, oh, I just failed. And I've got to learn from that. What was the fear in me? What was the shame in me?
Yeah.
That I didn't want to take that risk or take that step. So can you talk a little bit about there's still learning that goes on even when you can absolutely be free from the behavior?
Yes. Our goal is so much bigger than behavior change. Our goal is becoming mature sexually, spiritually, emotionally. And there's not a ceiling to your healing when that's your goal. It's like, man, I'm still becoming more mature. And yeah, even if it doesn't result in masturbation or porn, and I'm not trying to say that I have a specific stance on masturbation, but like, even just my own internal dialogue and thought life can be immature or sinful or something less than God intended. So I don't want to beat myself up over that, because the truth is I sin every single day. And so it's so much more liberating to have this mindset of, this is feedback. This is trying to teach me something. It's trying to tell me something. And I'm going to choose to be loved in the middle of it and to be a learner.
Talk just for a second of why that requires that there be a grace-based foundation to this entire journey. Because, you know, what you're saying there is maybe feels counterintuitive to people. Drew, I just hear you saying that there can be great progress, and yet you said you fail every day in some way. Help me reconcile that and maybe show how grace is the foundation for that kind of progress.
Well, people should read your book, Grace-Based Recovery. And I think you're the perfect person to talk about that. I absolutely believe that the most powerful motivation for change is the gospel, God's grace, and our identity in Christ. Yeah. So with that in mind, like, every time I make a mistake or I find, man, I'm not as free as I thought, I'm not as healed as I thought, it's a chance to believe that gospel even more deeply, to have intimacy with God, become even closer, and to have a stronger foundation. Like, you know, I am loved. I am redeemed. Maybe even more than I thought. And so if we get into the theology of all this, we are living in the already and the not yet. We have been delivered from the penalty of sin. One day we will be delivered from the very presence of sin. But right now we're still being delivered from the power of sin, and that is ongoing till the day we die.
That's so good. So what is something that you really would hope that anyone that reads this book would get out of it? Like, what's your greatest hope for somebody that reads this book?
My greatest hope for this book is that it would unlock kindness and compassion for yourself. And specifically for the younger parts of you that were first exploited by porn, that might still be attached to porn, and maybe that you've hated. I mean, I used to hate myself for this secret obsession. And now, for me, the greatest gift is learning to love that boy and allow Jesus to love that boy within me. It just gets me.
That's good. That's good. Well, Drew, this has been a great conversation. Share a little bit about your ministry, how people can get resources that you have there, and then also how folks can get a copy of the book, Outgrow Porn.
Yeah, you can get the book at outgrowporn.com, and you can find out more about our ministry, Husband Material Ministries, now a nonprofit, at husbandmaterial.com. We have lots of free resources, like a weekly podcast, private community, conferences, and really hoping to not just give you the information about how to outgrow porn, but the support and community to experience it.
That's great. Well, Drew, it's always a pleasure to connect with you. And so thanks for being on the program.
You too, Jonathan. I am just so encouraged every time I hear you speak. So thank you for your influence and for your mentorship.
You bet. Well, listeners and viewers, definitely go grab a copy of Drew's new book, Outgrow Porn. We're going to put a link in the show notes and some other information about husband material in there so that, guys, you can take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. That's what we're here for, is to help you do that. And so please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care. Hi, men. I'm Jonathan Daugherty, author of Grace-Based Recovery, and I'd love for you to join us in one of our upcoming online study groups. These 8-week groups take you through all the key principles of recovery from the Grace-Based Recovery book in a small group setting with other men on the same journey. The format is really simple and secure. We keep the groups to 10 men max, and we meet online in a private video room, so your story is safe with us. These groups are led by men who have traveled this road themselves and know firsthand how grace is the true engine of recovery and life transformation. I encourage you to take your next best step to freedom, joy, and peace. Register now for the next Grace-Based Recovery Group. We can't wait to connect with you. To register, go to bebroken.org/GBR. That's bebroken.org/GBR, or you can call us at 210-822-8201.